Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Yes, well, welcome everybody, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for October 17th, 2012. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. I'm so happy that you are here today. I have a great podcast for you today. We're going to do something a little different today on The Healthy Mind. There had been some emails requesting this over the last couple of months or so on the subconscious mind, the unconscious mind, and how much of the decisions that we make, well, how much of those are really free will? How much of our conscious action is really free will? And how much does the subconscious mind play a role in helping us to make decisions? Decisions that we think we are making free and of our own accord. And you're going to want to stick around to hear this because I'm going to discuss a few studies that have really challenged the idea of us making some of these free choices of our own will. And really, it is important to consider because all of these experiences that we've had in our life, they're stored in our brain. They're stored in our brain, and they can be called up consciously to remember some of the memories that we have, or they can be called up and affect the way that we think and act without us even being aware of it. And this has very important implications, both on the way that we react emotionally, and as I've talked about before, as it relates to emotions and physical pain, how we can react with physical symptoms when those underlying emotions may risk coming to consciousness and what we do to keep them down, all perhaps away from our awareness. So we're going to talk about this really interesting subject. I've touched on this before. It's been a long, long time. So I want to take a little bit of time to discuss our subconscious mind and the role it may play in our decision-making and the choices that we believe we make of our own free will. So that's what we're going to focus on The Healthy Mind today. We're going to do news and headlines, and we have got ourselves a jam-packed show. So you are here on a great day. As always, the website, www.thehealthymind.com. And any questions or comments, please keep those emails coming. The email address, Peter at thehealthymind.com. And a special welcome to our new listeners. I really do appreciate it. Thank you all for subscribing to the free monthly newsletter as well. If you haven't, you can do so on the homepage. Okay, now, our subconscious mind. And as many of you know, if you've been listening to the program, not only is this important to me as a psychiatrist in trying to understand the thought processes in individuals who come to see me and why they behave the way that they do, but I've also really been fascinated by this just in general, for myself, for my friends, how we behave and the way that our behavior can be manipulated or affected by stimuli we're not even aware of, kind of this subconscious or subliminal priming that causes us to act in the way that we do. And I always give the same example when I try to explain this to others. So I'm going to do it here today for you, okay? Now, take a second. I want you to clear your mind And right now, I want you to take a moment and think about your first kiss. Your very first kiss. Now, it might have come back to you very quickly, but now I bet you are picturing it. You know where it was, whenever it was in school or not. It might have been decades ago that you had thought about this memory, but as soon as I said it, primed it for you to recall it, boom, it came right back. It's there. It's always there. Now, there might be the memory of it, there might be feelings associated with it, perhaps a certain song, or even a real vivid emotional picture of what that was like. But the point is, a very quick priming, me asking you to remember your first kiss, brought back a memory and maybe even an emotion. Now, there are more subtler ways to affect our emotions and also our actions. And I've talked about this with various experiments that have been done in the past, but I wanted you to get a sense of how what we feel might be free will and conscious decision making, fully of our own, without influence, isn't as free as we think. I want to talk to you about the hot coffee versus iced coffee experiment. And this was done a few years back at Yale University. And what the researchers wanted to see was, could they prime the individuals in the study to think about a person in a certain way by priming them subconsciously? So what did they do? They set it up. So college students were walking down a hallway and they bumped into a lab assistant. And this lab assistant had a bunch of textbooks and folders and also was holding a cup of coffee. And what they did was they varied the temperature of the cup of coffee. You might be holding a hot cup of coffee in one hand or an iced cup of coffee in the hand. Now, when these students came up to the lab assistant, who, by the way, was in on the experiment, he asked for some help because he had so many things. So he handed the students the cup of coffee. And what the researchers wanted to investigate was they wanted to see if it was possible, in almost a subliminal way, would it be possible to affect the way that these students in the study felt about a hypothetical person that they discussed just a little bit later in the study, but could they affect the way that they felt about that person simply by varying the type of coffee that they held in their hands, a warm temperature or a cold temperature against their hands? Now, you think, no way, right? But the results were absolutely stunning. Check this out. The students who held a cup of iced coffee rated a hypothetical person they later read about in this experiment as being colder, less social, and more selfish than did those students who just for a few moments held a cup of hot coffee. That's all it took. Just prime for a second with a hot or a cold cup of coffee made a difference in the way people perceived others. All it took was a second. Much like I asked you to think about your kiss, all it took was a second. It changed the way the students perceived other people. Now, the students had no idea. They didn't realize that this was happening. They felt, hey, I learned about a hypothetical person, and they just seem cold. It's free will, right? Maybe. But then again, maybe not at all. Now, I want to go to another experiment. This was the briefcase versus backpack study. And I use this one a lot when I'm talking to my patients and other individuals about the power of the subconscious mind. Now, this one was done at Stanford University. And the students that were in the study were doing a one-on-one investment game with another person, but they couldn't see the other person who was there. All they would do is sit at a large table. And on the other end of this table, there was either a briefcase and a black portfolio or a backpack. Okay, so we've set the stage. You're going to play an investment game with another person that you can't see. And you're sitting at a table, and the only thing that's on this table that you can see is either a black briefcase or a backpack. And what they found was amazing. For the students who played this game with the unseen person and all they could see was a briefcase, they were far more stingier in their investment decisions than the individuals who played the exact same part of the game in the experiment but saw a backpack. Now keep in mind, the placement of either the briefcase or the backpack was very subtle. In fact, when they interviewed the students afterwards, they didn't even recall seeing a backpack or a briefcase. But the presence of something as subtle as that changed the way that people behaved, that people reacted. The amazing, amazing power of our subconscious mind and how it can be influenced or even manipulated, even without us knowing. Fascinating, fascinating experiments. And if you're interested in more when the show's done, click over to the links page on thehealthymind.com. And one of the links is the Invisible Gorilla Experiment. It's a video on YouTube. Watch it and check out your reaction. You will be fascinated. But why do I bring it up? What's the whole point here? Well, first off, and there's many points here, but first off, it's important to realize how complex our mind is. Even the things that we think are of our own free will, the decisions that we make, the way that we react, the emotions that we have, although we feel we may know exactly where they're coming from, oftentimes we may not really realize where things are coming from in the way that we react. And it's important to me, at least in my clinical practice, that people understand the complexity of what goes into our decision-making and the emotions that we have. Because little things can make a huge difference in the way that we feel, whether it's feeling well or feeling badly, feeling happy and assured or feeling depressed and anxious, or maybe reacting physically and starting to have physical pain. But oftentimes what happens is, especially when things aren't going well, people think, particularly when it's random, when someone comes in and they're very anxious, they don't know why, or depressed and they don't know why, it too often goes to people feeling, hey, I'm just weak, I'm not strong, I can't handle these things, it just happens. And it just is not true. You know how important it is for me in these broadcasts to have people understand how truly powerful they are, how complex we all are. And when we don't feel well, or when we are confused in the way that we have acted, why did I react in the way that I did? Why did this make me angry, or that make me happy? Or why did this make me feel so scared? We have to take time to at least respect with compassion the complexity of our mind. Things can happen and we make decisions based on feelings we don't even realize have been triggered. Think about that for a minute. I mean, this is the cornerstone of all marketing and advertising. It is trying to trigger an emotion in you that you didn't realize was triggered so that you would go and behave a certain way. You would go and buy something. And in my field, in my profession, these same forces are what affect people and make them feel a certain way and make them behave in certain ways. And certainly in some of the pain work that I do, we see these forces as well. When these thoughts or feelings that are very, very terrible to bring up into consciousness come close, boom! Pain is used as a shield or a refuge away from these negative feelings. It isn't because you are weak. It is simply, it is simply that we are so complex. And it's that that makes us human, this complexity. So be careful how much you knock yourself down because you feel, I'm not strong enough. I can't handle this. My emotions are all over the place. They're so unpredictable. I can't handle anything. I don't know why I'm in this much emotional or physical pain. We're complex, and you're strong. Take the time to learn a little bit about how complex the human mind is. It's a really interesting thing to consider, and I think that it gives you a little bit more respect and compassion for your own actions. And that, my friends, would be a wonderful step to take as we walk down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, it was a busy week for health news. This first story, just a really compelling story. The headline, Creativity and Emotional Illness. Another link emerges. Now, those of us in psychiatry and in the mental health profession have known that there is some link between artistic ability, creativity, and emotional illness. You just tend to see a higher prevalence of mood disorders, whether it's depression or bipolar disorder, mania, and those that have incredible creative ability. Artists, musicians, fine artists, mathematicians, and professors. Well, studies had shown that to a smaller degree, but a new study that's come out of Sweden, really, it's one of the largest registries and the most comprehensive study of its kind in this particular field. And what they found was that people in creative professions, well, they tend to be treated more often for emotional illness than in the general population. And what they found also, very interestingly, was there was this connection between writing ability and schizophrenia. Now, last year, this same university team showed that artists as well as scientists were more common among families where bipolar disorder and schizophrenia was present compared to the population at large that doesn't have a family history of these disorders. And what they decided to do based on that was to expand the study even further. And they would look at a wide range of diagnoses. They'd look at depression, anxiety, alcohol and drug abuse, ADHD, and other emotional disorders. And the scope was amazing. They tracked 1.2 million individuals. 1.2 million individuals and their relatives, all the way down to the second cousin level. This was really amazing, the breadth of this study, because it incorporated much of the Swedish population from the most recent decades. Their results confirmed, like previous studies that they had done, certain mental illnesses, say like bipolar disorder, is more prevalent in the entire group of people with artistic or scientific professions, folks who are dancers or singers or fine artists or college professors and authors, writers. Now, speaking of authors were more likely to have depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, and substance abuse. And the ominous part of this is that authors were 50% more likely to commit suicide than the general population. Now, this is something that I talk to people almost regularly about because individuals with these mood disorders, particularly bipolar, are some of the most creative people I've ever met. And what I want people to understand is that these disorders don't just have the negative parts of the emotional struggle that they have, the depression and the mania and the mood fluctuation all over, but these disorders really unlock an amazing part of the brain that allows individuals to be creative. It unlocks that part of the brain and allows people to be unbelievably creative and artistic and successful. So it really makes you think, well, what's going on here? Is this totally emotional illness? And really, according to one of the researchers in this study, Simon Kiaga, these results give cause to reconsider approaches to mental illness. According to him, quote, if one takes the view that certain phenomena associated with the patient's illness are beneficial, it opens the way for a new approach to treatment. In that case, the doctor and the patient must come to an agreement on what is to be treated and at what cost. End of quotes. And that's what we've got to be careful of, because it isn't all bad. Not to minimize the suffering, but people have to understand, particularly now with studies like this, that the same thing that we call illness, emotional illness, is also likely the reason why so many of these individuals are so profoundly creative and talented. It's a double-edged sword there, but it really makes you have to pause. Certainly it does for me, to make sure that I help an individual out so that the mood doesn't impair a person's quality of life, but not to the point where it blunts their creativity. So really interesting study, a solid confirmation of the link between creativity and emotional illness. Okay, the next piece of news. I really like this one. The headline, negative news stories affect women more than men. How about this? Researchers have found that the media, what news stories people receive, can change a woman's sensitivity to stressful situations. Now, this was a study out of the University of Montreal, and what they found was that negative news articles in the media increase a woman's sensitivity to stressful situations, but this doesn't happen in men. The women who participated in the study as well had a much clearer recollection of the information that they had learned. According to the lead author, Marie-Frances Marin, quote, "It's difficult to avoid the news, considering the multitude of news sources that are out there. And what if all that news was bad for us? It certainly looks like this could be the case." End of quotes. Now, the researchers asked about 60 people. They divided them into four different groups to read actual news stories. And what they did was they determined their stress levels by getting some of their saliva and analyzing a hormone known as cortisol. And we've talked about that before here on The Healthy Mind. Cortisol is like a stress hormone. When we're stressed, that cortisol just ramps up in our body. Now, these individuals were confronted with a bunch of different tasks involving memory and intellect that allowed the researchers to evaluate and compare how people react to stressful situations. And the researchers, quite frankly, weren't surprised by what they found. According to Dr. Marin again, quote, "Although the news stories alone did not increase stress levels, they did make the women more reactive, affecting their physiological response to later stressful situations." So you have a bad news article or a negative news article, and it impacts how women will react to stressful situations later. The researchers found this when they saw that the level of cortisol in women who read the negative news was higher after the stress part of the experiment compared to the women who read neutral news. Now, why does this happen? Why this disparity between men and women? And according to the researchers, it may have a lot to do with evolution. And they talked about other scientists and other studies that have been done that considered perhaps the emphasis on survival of the offspring may have influenced women and their stress system for women to be more empathetic or react more sensitively when things are stressful. And it might explain why women could be more susceptible to these indirect threats. So women react differently to negative news stories from men, and specifically, it changes their sensitivity to stressful situations after they've experienced the negative news. Amazing what our mind can do. Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Social contact can ease pain related to nerve damage. Companionship has the potential to reduce pain linked to nerve damage, according to a new study. The animal research suggests that social contact has both behavioral and physiologic influences. The next headline. Exercise may lead to better performance for kids with ADHD. A few minutes of exercise can help children with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder perform better academically. This, according to a new study led by a Michigan State University researcher. And finally, the impact of stress on our health. The headline, immune response may link social rejection to later health outcomes. A new study in the journal Clinical Psychological Science examines the immune response as a potential link between social stressors like rejection and later mental and physical health outcomes. The amazing effect of stress on our bodies, not just emotional, but physical as well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Please don't hesitate to sign up for the free monthly newsletter. You can find the tab right there on the homepage. Follow me anytime on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, anything that you want to talk about, I want to hear from you. Don't hesitate to email me. The email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.